Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, of springs and what else? Vectors of momentum, I don't know. The idea that energy can cancel. And I'm kind of arguing, no, it really can't do that. Whatever canceling would be, that doesn't happen. So, for example, if I had two objects, two trains, for example, a 10-ton going 5 miles an hour and a 5-ton going 10 miles an hour, their energy, respectively, in a collision wouldn't cancel. No part of it would cancel. Because the two vectors are going in opposite direction doesn't mean the energy will disappear from the universe. And likewise, if they were going in the opposite direction, I can't say, because this has 130 and this one has 30, that somehow I can cancel 30 here and say there's only 100 momentum going this way. Now, as an outcome from an event, that might be what happens, but there will be a trail of the energy. You have to start with 160, okay, to start with, and you can get rid of 60. But you can't make it go away like it never existed. It has to exist in the initial objects being propelled by some kind of explosion or something. You have to start with enough energy to create your products. All right, and so in the train example, obviously the energy leaves in a bunch of other directions when the parts go flying off. And then you could sort of understand, if you had two carts, what would happen if they collide. Is that, you know, whatever sticks them together, whatever you're using to make sure they just don't bounce off of each other, that's going to incur some sort of vibrations and attachments and reattachments, like the Velcro would stretch and there would be heat created and all kinds of stuff. But also you can understand the carts are probably going to tip up. They're going to be forced down into the track and they're going to probably pop up against gravity and use up some of the energy in movements in other directions that aren't this direction and this direction that you started with. You're going to essentially convert it, like other collisions, into motions in other directions. So you have to account for it all. You can't just say, you know, if conservation means that you have to always, if you're going to say something turned right and then something turned left, you had to have the energy to turn right and the energy to turn left for those two motions to give you back to your neutral. That you can't do it for free is the point. All right, so that gets to some of the experiments that have been previously described. And, you know, I don't know how explicit my statements in the past were or how precise they were, but yeah, so it might be a revision. We'll see, technically. Not a major revision, just a minor revision. All right, so what the trolls of this channel have sort of established and maybe have accepted is that with outsprings, an experiment where you take a... Oh, wonderful. Not entirely dry, I guess. A one mass, all right, you collide it into a two mass, okay, and you're supposed to get, okay, say you start off with 100 momentum, you get 130 going this way and 30 going back this way. Well, it's 33, but whatever. We can lose the extra 5. So you start with 100 momentum, and in theory, you're supposed to end up with 165 total actionable momentum. That is 30 this way, 130 this way, and you're supposed to subtract this 30 from this 30 because they're in opposite directions. And I'm arguing that obviously you can't just subtract it. It has to be real energy. So if you didn't start with 165, you really can't create 165, okay, that's making free energy. So without springs, the experiment doesn't work this way, okay, the prediction doesn't happen, and what you really end up with is, you know, something like 70 of the momentum here and 30 of the momentum here in the rebound. Or in the case of the actual experiment, you end up with 100 here and only half the velocity. So in the case, the predicted case, the 130 number, okay, would represent 2/3 of the initial velocity of the one mass object. And you don't get the 2/3, you get the 1/2, which would equal 100% of the momentum. So instead of this 165, you just get the 100. And you don't have any 30 going back. So that's the way it came out. So anyway, you would predict that there would be some rebound, but there frankly just wasn't. All right, anyway. So the point is that, okay, so if we don't have springs, but we have a clean contact, that is, the collision has every appearance of being clean, and that no huge amount of sound is created, no huge amount of heat or pieces don't fly off. I mean, the two things presumably intersect across their surface, hitting little high points. They hit the little high points, send the energy into the object, and it is transferred rather efficiently. I'd say it has to be really efficient in the sense that all of the energy that was in the one mass object goes into the two mass object, indicating there was a pretty free path. Because sort of the argument would be is the absence of a free path is why the other cart will keep moving or rebound or reflect, is because it can't get its energy into the other object for some reason. So anyway, so it's been sort of established that springs, okay, no spring, okay, spring with a line through it, the prediction doesn't work. And the argument is somehow if I put a spring in the experiment, I can create this 165, I can create the 130, the 2/3 velocity. Now, I'm arguing that's not going to happen because it's free energy, because the only energy that went in is 100, and you can't possibly have 165 out. You can't possibly go right and then turn left, because the energy to turn right and the energy to turn left has to come out of the energy you have. You can't do the cancellation thing unless you have energy to give away, because the cancellation, again, I guess what I'm saying is every cancellation of energy has to come out of a change in the direction of the energy, a change in its form, okay? So you're taking motion in a direction and you're converting it into heat, or you're moving, you know, across a surface and you're moving bits of the surface, you know, you're changing its position, you're moving friction, in other words. So you have to use it up in some way. You can't just make free energy. All right, so what role could springs possibly play, I guess is the argument. All right, so maybe we'll erase again. All right, back. All right, so there's a classic experiment described by Feynman and others. And so you have an explosion between two carts. All right, now if they're equal mass carts, all right, the idea is that half the energy goes this way and half the energy goes this way. Now, if they're unequal mass carts, okay, the argument is still, okay, that half the energy goes this way and half the energy goes this way. So this goes 1/2 the velocity. All right, and these all have V, V, V. All right. Now the question is, what happens when you eventually get, so say you go to 3, okay, and the idea is 1/3, all right, and so you're constantly conserving the momentum. As you increase the mass, you proportionally decrease the velocity of what's leaving in this way, and what leaves this way is always the same V, the same standard velocity, the same velocity goes this way. So it's the idea of, say, the gun and the bullet. You can do some changes to the bullet, or you can changes to the gun's mass, but you're always going to get the same energy going one way as you have going the other way because of the nature of the explosion, I would argue. Now the trick here is we can use springs. So instead of an explosion, we compress a spring. Now the trick will be is if the object doesn't move, that is, if once you get to the point where this object, okay, does not move. So in all these cases, it moves at a velocity proportional to its mass. That is, it's absorbing energy at the same rate. This side absorbs energy at the same rate as this side. This side absorbs the energy at the same rate because it has a bigger volume. So it's like a bigger bottle. You can pour it in, but it pours slower. Now, yeah, that's probably a good enough way to say it. So you get there, you're getting the same amount of energy in at the same rate, even though it looks like it's moving slower. Well, it is moving slower. The fact is you're moving more mass, so you gave away the same energy that you gave away to give this the higher velocity. And like I said, so here you have the final weight, okay, which is a weight that won't move. And now what happens to this explosion or the spring? Now, the argument would be in a gun, it's not going to make any difference if this doesn't move. Now, if you have no recoil, that is, you mount a gun to something that just makes it impossible for the gun to move, that is impossible for it to absorb any of the energy. The fact is, in a gun, it is a very fast explosion. So the explosion really can't catch up, you know, and say, okay, I'm going to give the energy. I can't give this because it won't accept it. I can't give it any motion. I can't give it any velocity. It won't accept it. And give it to the bullet instead. So the idea would be is you can't, like, hold the gun more steady unless you're going to hold it perfectly steady because it's going to absorb the energy if you allow it to move. So the more rigid the gun doesn't mean the bullet leaves faster because the explosion happens so fast that any reflection takes too long to catch up to the bullet. This little bit of time it takes for the explosion to go this way and then reverse direction and come back this way is too slow to catch up because the bullet's already gone. So the energy can't get to the bullet, would be my argument. So that's a hypothesis, okay? All right. And so back to the cart. So we'll just take that as a different example. So we have an object that's immovable. All right, immovable. And we have a spring. And the spring's expanding to push the one mass cart. All right, now, so the trick is that we know the total energy here, say if this was leaving at 50 and this left at 50, okay, so all of these are 50, 50, 50, 50, all the way down of momentum. All right, and 50 on this side. And then, so now when we get here, this can't leave at 50, okay, because we know this other 50 is in the spring. So the real trick is, the camera could be better. So this looks like 1M. I guess I shouldn't have said that. So this is just solid. Anyway, all right, so this is going to have to, or may leave at 100. So this, once you make it immovable, then the spring can give the energy it would have given this way to this object. So there's a key point in this transition where, because the energy can't be directed this way at the same speed that the energy is going the other way, that then the center of mass of the spring actually now changes because now the spring moves. So in a sense, the spring, the center of the compression of the spring, in all of these examples, the center of the compression of the spring would stay the same because it's giving away energy both ways at the same rate. Same rate, same rate. The volume of energy, okay, is the same, even though you're holding it in a different container. You know, one container is shaped like this, and one container is shaped like this. Okay, so you're putting the energy in different containers of mass to velocity, but it's the same volume of energy that's going both ways. But in this case, okay, so you have no volume here, and you have obviously this one's going to have to take the full volume of 100, not have to. So that's the question about it. It really would depend on how tight the spring is too. But anyway, the key point is that the spring always had a center that stayed, okay? But you gave away the same amount both ways, the spring doesn't move, the center of the spring's mass. But in this case, the center of the spring's mass will move. Because this isn't moving, the spring will reflect off the wall. So the spring will start moving away from the wall. The center of its mass will move towards the other object. Okay, and that will be the extra 50 that it potentially could get. Now, I don't know if it gets a full 100 here, because I don't know how effective the spring is. So that's when you get into how stiff the spring is. Because the spring has to be able to move that center of mass quickly enough to overcome the fact that this object's already leaving. So it's got a velocity. It's getting its 50% of the energy. So it's starting to move, and then the spring itself is moving, okay? And the spring has to move as faster than the rate of the velocity that the thing's leaving at. So it's like the bullet example. The reflection can't catch up to the bullet if the bullet's going really fast. Now, if the bullet's going slower, then you could have an explosion and you get more into the bullet. So if you made a big bullet, a heavy bullet, like half the mass of the gun, okay, it still wouldn't work because the gun, you know, you have to make the gun non-movable. And then maybe the explosion could cause the object to move faster. So it really just has to do with whether your spring can give its energy in both directions. All right, so there's one more point I suppose I want to emphasize. Yeah, I think. All right, so I have argued, and will probably to the day I die, that momentum, okay, MV, is just another way of saying weight, okay? So how much something weighs. It's just the pressure. So weight, pressure, momentum, all the same thing. It's all energy, okay? You can't, it's just how much does something weigh. I've used the example, gravity is pushing you into the earth. If I put a spring, a scale, okay, in between you and the earth, it'll tell me how much you compress the spring, and that is a measurement of your weight. Or, and if I did it sideways, that is, if I moved you at, say, 1 meter per second, I would end up measuring your weight as your momentum. Your mass times your velocity would be the same as what you weigh. So it's what your mass, your atomic, what do you call it? Your atomic mass, I can't think of the right word, atomic weight, the weight of your electrons and your protons, and it's just basically going to tell you your weight is just them moving. So when you move electrons and protons at 1 meter per second, they weigh the same as their mass. Okay, would be the simple, easy mathematical exchange. Now, whether that's explicitly correct, well, but anyway, so that's the simple argument. So what happens if you have an object and you have a spring? Let's see how to draw this. Well, let's say a spring that didn't compress easily. So it's really heavy steel, and you hit it with a certain weight. Well, it's not enough weight to actually bend the steel, so the steel won't spring. And so what you're going to hit the surface with is the same pressure you're applying here is the same pressure you're going to apply here. You're going to feel. Now, if the spring is not that stiff, so something less than infinitely stiff, then it, the spring, is going to collapse, and it's going to absorb, say, if this is 100 pounds of pressure, then only a certain amount is going to be felt here, like 50, okay? Because the spring is going to take some of the energy, the pressure, and absorb it, all right? And so you're not going to feel it. And if I put another spring, exactly the same spring, you can understand that, well, that's basically going to cut whatever this was in half, and now only 25 over here, pounds of pressure. So whatever amount of compression I can get out of a spring, you know, half the compression will be here, half the compression will be here. So really you're just saying that the ease at which the spring compresses is part of defining how much you're going to feel. So you could have theoretically a spring between you and an object, all right, where the spring is compressible enough, that is, it'll absorb every bit of energy you're able to give it. You won't compress it. You won't come anywhere close to even compressing it halfway because it's so much spring. You know, I don't even know how to say that. It's a long enough spring that it'll absorb a lot of energy before the energy can get to you. So I guess that's the key point here, is that the thing that's not talked about springs is that it really matters how much time the spring has to absorb the energy and how capable it is. So theoretically, if I had a long enough spring that's flexible enough, so I take a really long spring, very loose spring, then I could hit it with a pressure of 100 pounds and I wouldn't feel like 1 pound here. You know, I would barely notice that there was something compressing the spring because it absorbs so much of the energy. So it's really about how much it absorbs. So this 50 number doesn't mean much, except as a relative comparison between if I take two equal springs, that's what I'll end up doing. So if I want to cut how much compression I'm going to feel, what pressure I'm going to feel from a spring, I can double it by just doubling the spring. And then, you know, reduce it by another third by increasing it with another spring, because it just adds to how much the spring will compress in total and how many of these little loops are going to get compressed and absorb the energy. And now when it gives it back, again, it wants to give it back in both directions, but if it can't because one side doesn't move, then the center of the mass of that entire length of spring will move, because it's the spring is lighter than the immovable object. I mean, if you have an infinite mass on one side, obviously anything on the other side will have to do the moving because it's going to be less massive. All right. So it's the trick is how much pressure gets to an object. So in the idea of this cart thing, you know, where you have a one mass and a two mass cart, and you got a spring here between them. The point would be is what is the two mass going to feel as the actual pressure versus the one mass that came in colliding with it. So clearly the argument is as the spring compresses, it's absorbing a percentage of the energy. So if it starts with 100 momentums, you know, 100 pounds, just to make it easy. So it starts with a weight of 100 pounds. The spring starts absorbing that energy. And so as it's absorbing it, you know, it's going to, you know, what's going to be felt over here, okay, is going to be diminished by some curve, okay, you know, as this compression absorbs what this will feel in terms of an actual push. So only some percentage of the energy can get into this object, because only a percentage of the weight is actually hitting it. So you know, you start off with 100, you know the spring is absorbing some, so you might only feel 50 here, okay. I pretend the 80's not there. Once the pressure's equalized, that is, this starts using its momentum to compress the spring. Part of the pressure finally gets to this object, and when these two pressures equalize, that is, this is down to 50 and this is feeling 50, that would be the point where you've compressed the spring its maximum amount, because you have an equal amount of pressure on both sides, and now the spring will start doing the opposite. So it'll give some percentage to this object, you know, 70, and this object could go back at 30, because now the spring's going to expand. So that's why springs make it possible for this object to go backwards. Without springs, it's more likely that this object continues forwards, unless there's a huge differential in the masses. So if you make this heavy enough that it doesn't move very well, then this will have to, the spring will have to give the energy this way, because the spring is going to be so much lighter than this immovable object that the spring will move its center of mass in the direction of the opposite cart. But again, you can, if you start with 100 in of weight, you can't end up with 160 out as weight. So the simple argument is this does not work. Okay, you can only use what you've got, and all you're talking about is how do you distribute it between the one mass and the two mass. But you can't end up with more out, regardless of direction, whether it's this direction, that direction, doesn't matter what direction, you can't move more matter in the universe than you have weight to move it with. Every bit of weight has to go somewhere, pushing on something, and you can't make more push. So that's probably enough. So we'll call that a video, and I have to wait till we have more precise and clinical experiments to interpret, explain, evaluate, and such. All right, so till the next time, this has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Debate physics also, but nobody, can't find anybody willing to debate. Made another offer, that you would think people couldn't possibly refuse. Name your price. And they won't even name their price. It's just so irritating. Anyway, till the next time. Such.